This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Tim Putnam. Tim is the CEO of Margaret Mary Healthcare, Margaret Mary Health System in Batesville, Indiana. He's also been heavily involved in the National Healthcare Rural Healthcare Association, NRHA, and served as president of that. We're going to talk to Tim about a number of different subjects today, workforce pandemic, addiction issues, EMS, and more. Tim, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, Scott. I'm Dr. Tim Putnam. I'm CEO of Margaret Mary Health in Batesville, Indiana. I have been here for about 12 years now.
And take a moment. The average tenure of a CEO of a health system is much, much shorter than 10 to 12 years. Talk about both CEO longevity as well as workforce philosophy, and how do you deal with continue to strengthen a rural workforce when the rural climate in our country has changed so much. Talk to us about CEO longevity, about rural healthcare, workforce issues, and so forth. Can you give us a few moments on those issues?
Sure. I think one of the challenges we've got in rural healthcare is the CEO turnover. When the CEO turns over every 2 to 3 years, you really can't get traction. You can't build the partnerships with other organizations. You can't create the vision and move it forward like you need to. So I think some of the more successful rural organizations have had strong, consistent leadership, and CEO turnover is just one component of that. But, you know, being the same organization, you know, making promises and fulfilling them year after year is really important to success of a rural organization.
And talk about this. Where do the rural CEOs go? Are they getting recruited by bigger systems? Are they just burnt out on running a rural healthcare system and go back to, you know, outside of healthcare? What is the cause of that turnover? I mean, a typical CEO, an average tenure might be 5 to 8 years. Somebody that's done 10, 12, 20 years, and we do get a chance to talk to some great rural health system CEOs that have been there for 20, 25 years. But the CEO job's a very hard job. Some people that aren't don't really realize how hard a job it can be and how stressful it can be. But talk about why it's so short and where do those people go that were rural CEOs?
Well, some of the rural CEOs will end up, you know, taking positions in larger systems, larger organizations. Many of them will go to other rural organizations as well. It really is a difficult situation. You come in to a rural community. You did not grow up there. Some comments about, well, I don't have enough cousins to watch my back in this town. It really becomes difficult to put roots down and become part of the community. I think sometimes the community helps that, sometimes it's a little bit difficult, but there's a lot of reasons why. Sometimes it's advancement, sometimes it's you get sideways with a rural medical staff, very difficult to succeed. Sometimes it's, you know, a political situation that happens with a board of directors. So a lot of varieties, but it's very difficult to come in to many rural organizations and be successful long-term.
And take a moment and talk to us about rural workforce issues. There's been shortages for a long time. They're clearly being exacerbated during the pandemic. Talk a little bit about what the future of the workforce looks like in rural communities for health systems.
Well, Scott, this is one of my favorite subjects to talk about. I think this is where we've got opportunities. Unfortunately, they're sort of long-term opportunities. And I talk about a lot of rural health systems being hunters and gatherers, going out and finding nurses, physicians, and other key staff and recruiting them into your rural town, which is really difficult. Again, it's like that CEO situation where you come in and you don't have enough family there, and it's tough to build a life because everything in rural communities is so family oriented. And people get together around here for lunch on Sundays and it's 15, 20, 30 people. That's the social environment. So I'm really big with my colleagues on moving from hunter-gatherer to agrarian. How do we work with kids in junior highs, high schools, to get them involved in healthcare professions? We have a mentorship program that we've got here where students take a class for an entire semester and spend that class in high school in the hospital, getting exposed to so many different areas. And then we try and help them align to undergrad programs, and if they're interested in medical school, work with the medical schools. They have their rotations back here. Everything we can to help those folks become successful. But it takes, it's not like growing corn and tomatoes. This is like growing an orchard or a vineyard.
I mean, it's really a long-term game, and you're in a rural community, a great rural community. You're in a healthy community that still has economics, still is generally healthy in the big scheme of things. But the kids that go on to college, go to Indiana University, they go to University of Illinois, they go to Purdue, they go wherever they might go. And then a lot of them end up, you know, settling in Indianapolis, Chicago, other, you know, bigger Midwestern cities. How do you get a percentage to stay and grow and live there and so forth? Because that's really what you're talking about, more agrarian than trying to hunt and gather and take people from outside of the systems, to your community. And that's much harder because you got to convert them to being comfortable in the town that you're in. So that's a much harder game. So you're really playing a long game.
Yeah, you really are. And it's staying connected with them. When they go to the big city and they see what life is like, and it always happens, they meet the boy or the girl that's not from my community. So then it becomes, how do you get them comfortable that coming back here? One of the things we've had success doing is we hire them in the summertime, especially the ones that are wanting to go on to advanced degrees and things like that. We hire them as transporters. We keep them engaged. A lot of times that's not full-time, but it really gives them the kind of experience that their classmates don't have. So,
yeah.
You know, I think it's exposing them early on, keeping being engaged with them, and realizing that this kind of is a long play, and it's like spreading a lot of seeds out. Not all of them are going to grow. But you put enough of them out there, and you've got this potential workforce coming forward, and it gives rural organizations that thing to look forward to. We've got, you know, 4 kids in medical school right now. Not all of them will come back, but 1 or 2 will.
Magnificent. And a lot of this agrarian philosophy starts at home. I know that in the past, your daughter, who's a remarkable young lady, had sort of, presented with you at one of our conferences. Talk a little bit about, you know, what you did with your daughter and keeping your daughter engaged in health and learning about health and so forth. I think it's a great lesson for lots of leaders.
Well, it really was a great opportunity. So I have a daughter who's interested in healthcare, but didn't know what she was specifically interested in. And I encouraged her to take an EMT class when she was a senior in high school, because this is kind of the exposure to the entire healthcare organization, or a lot of it, and pretty useful information. So she signs up for the EMT class, and I thought, you know, this is probably good information for me to have as well. So we both take the class together. It was a big shock when we started the first day of class, and I show up and sit next to her. And if I could encourage leaders to do anything from this perspective, you get a chance to take a class like that with one of your kids, it is a truly memorable experience. But we went through all of that and ended up being certified. And then both of us ran 911 together for a few years. Great exposure into the healthcare field. And, you know, now she's pursuing her master's in healthcare administration, master's in public health. So didn't go down the EMS paramedic route that far, but really gave her great exposure to patient care and what it's like to be in healthcare and deliver healthcare.
Well, just magnificent. And what a great story, and what a great way of dealing with things. I'd like to talk about 2 other issues that have been particularly challenging for rural America. Give us a sense of what's going on with addiction issues today. If you went back 4 to 5 years ago, particularly in the world that we live in the Midwest, in rural communities, a tremendous challenge for communities. And I know the pandemic and lockdowns have not helped that. But talk about, what are you seeing with addiction today in communities?
Well, addictions really ties into when I started running 911 as an EMT, 2015 or so. What I ended up seeing, several overdoses, and addictions are one of those things in a rural community where it affects the rural community a lot, but the hospital is not seeing many of them until we started seeing the overdoses. Because someone has addictions, they're not engaging with the healthcare system a lot. We ended up seeing a lot of those overdoses and really negatively impacting our community, and it became quite an important issue. Now, I was very lucky. We worked with a student in the MHSA program at Xavier University, Nikki King, who ended up coming here as a manager of our addictions and behavioral health services, and she built a phenomenal addictions program. We can't do inpatient care. We just don't have the volume here, but she opened up an intensive outpatient addictions program that's had tremendous success. We've had over 75 people complete the program and stay clean throughout the time of the addictions program in the past, I think, 2 years. So now we've got a situation in our community where we've got 70 people to look to that have fought this tremendous challenge and come through the other side. And they're great examples for everybody fighting addictions right now.
Magnificent, magnificent. And take a moment, Tim, talk to us about what you're seeing with COVID-19 and the pandemic. Again, at first, this was big cities were getting hit very hard. Now rural communities are struggling in many places and often don't have the backup and support that some of the big cities have. Tell us a little bit about what you're seeing currently.
Well, what we're seeing currently is a little bit like what we saw in March. We were one of the rural hospitals in the country to get hit very hard by the pandemic. We filled up our entire facility within a matter of a couple of weeks. Today, we're seeing much of the same thing. We're a 25-bed licensed facility, and we have 37 patients right now. We're also, you know, seeing that fatigue come from our staff as they're coming in day after day, taking care of really critically ill patients and just struggling to fight the same battle over and over again. One thing that has been truly amazing is the partnerships we've got with other organizations, tertiary hospitals in Cincinnati, a lot of community hospitals throughout Indiana, working together, sharing resources, transferring patients as necessary. You know, I've learned in a pandemic, there's no competition. Everybody's working together, and it just makes you feel good about the healthcare system in the U.S.
Do you see, does the vaccine and seeing positivity rate start to come down just a little bit, at least there in some communities? Is there some light at the end of the tunnel, or is it just very challenging for the foreseeable future?
Well, I think the vaccines give us the thing to look forward to, and I think we've got to have that from our mental health. I think our mental health has suffered quite a bit during the pandemic. Isolation, fatigue, like I talked about. So having that vaccine to look forward to. Now, that being said, the timeline we're looking at is mid-December before we start seeing people get the vaccine. The second dose will be in January, and then the real immunity will kick in a week after that. So, you know, we're looking at mid to latter part of January before the first wave of that vaccination really has an impact. So we're still in the soup for some time. There's no doubt about that, but we have that to look forward to. And I think it leads to a much better 2021.
Yes, absolutely. And so if you see it in your community, do you think that in December, it depends, I know, on the authorizations for Pfizer and Moderna and so forth, that you might be able to get your healthcare workforce vaccinated and maybe some more people?
Yeah, in phase 1A and phase 1B, phase 1A being the healthcare workers, we feel good about what the state's done to be able to plan to have the vaccine available, again, contingent upon the FDA and CDC's approval. But we feel good about the distribution plan of putting things in place right now to be able to get it to as many people as possible as soon as we get the vaccine. So we feel pretty good about the process. We're doing dry runs this week, as a matter of fact, and we're bringing in logistics experts from outside of healthcare to make sure we're doing everything we can to make it as efficient and effective as possible.
Well, that's magnificent, and probably hopefully not too long. And do they talk about maybe 20 million people being vaccinated in the country in December, if we're fortunate? Do they have a sense of how many in January or February? Did you get a sense of numbers on that?
Now, the real variability is going to be, is one vaccine approved or is it two? You know, is it both Pfizer and Moderna? If we get both of those approved, all of a sudden things ramp up much more quickly than if just one vaccine's approved. But that's what I'm really hoping for. Both are highly effective. Both are approved and in large quantities. I'd love to see that 20 million number hit in December.
Right, and then you could be looking at 30 to 40 in January and really be in the right direction.
I'd work the assembly line myself at the factory if it helped produce more vaccine.
Exactly. God bless you. Tim, I want to thank you. What a magnificent leadership career. What a magnificent story of fostering growth in a great rural community. Tim, thank you so much for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast.
Glad to, Scott. You take care. Have a great day.